It's wonderful to be here at Highland Park Baptist Church, but I have a heavy heart. You know, we live in Israel. We cover the Middle East. We have journalists covering the Middle East. It's not a simplistic thing. It's a very difficult task. Journalists throughout the region. Stephen Sotloff, the American and the Israeli who was beheaded, was our journalist. I was the last person to speak to him, except for his family, before he went into Syria the last time. And I look at the two oceans, and I'm thinking of what's going on, and the feeling of despair and hope, the feeling of prayer, the feeling of God, the feeling of two oceans. And the message that I want to start with is that Charleston and Jerusalem have a lot in common over the weekend. There were attacks in Charleston, these lone wolf attacks that you can't imagine, that you can't control. The lone wolf attack in Jerusalem just this morning, as we're speaking to our son in Jerusalem. He's a medic who's taken care of thousands of people since he's 15, Jew, Christian, Muslim, doesn't matter who they are. Often the terrorist. The terrorist who came in, who did not have a permit during Ramadan right now, because the holy month of Ramadan has just begun, where almost 1 million Palestinians are allowed into Israel. But this one did not have a permit and came in, and he stabbed a border policeman. The border policeman managed to shoot him. They're both in critical condition. And that same terrorist is now sitting in Hadassah Hospital being treated by Israeli or Arab doctors as we speak. Kind of ironic of what goes on in Jerusalem. But it's these lone wolf terrorist attacks that are things that we have witnessed over and over in the last 15 years sitting covering stories from around the region. It's sad to say, and we can't explain the evil and the hate that's amongst people like that because we can't relate to the irrational. But it should be a message. The message that we hear ringing throughout the United States in churches, synagogues, and even mosques this weekend that we have witnessed, where we need to be much more aware of what is happening in the Middle East and here in the United States around us, that we need to understand and call evil evil and terror terror and get rid of it and erase it. But we also need to call on those very, very bold and brave people, Muslims who were not like that. Those women that I know, women that I have found one by one. I was in Yemen a month before the revolution to meet the woman editor of the Yemen Times because she was taking content from the media line because we supply content to about 40 news outlets around the world. It's very hard to tell you about the media line in 5 or 10 minutes, so I'm going to keep it short, but hopefully you'll get a sense as you learn more about us. But that trip to Yemen was very important because that trip to Yemen was about this woman who was taking content from Egypt and Lebanon, but also from Israel. What does it mean to have complete reporting? The good and the bad. She was taking the good and the bad of stories from Israel in Yemen, where Al-Qaeda was sitting right around her. And how was that possible? Because she was a brave, bold woman who was able to come here to the United States and speak both on NPR and on Dennis Prager's show and say, all Yemenis don't hate Jews in Israel. The more women that are out there, and I'm saying women for a reason, because the way that you judge a country in terms of its growth anywhere in the world is by two things, press freedom and the glass ceiling in terms of where women are, whether it's in the workforce or beyond. There's so much happening right now. Looking at the borders on Egypt, Stephen Sotloff, a year and a half ahead of the curve, was telling through our agency the stories of what happened on that Sinai border that unveiled and unfolded last summer. Stephen Sotloff was telling us about what happened with ISIS and jihadism way ahead of the New York Times. We were reporting it. So you may look at information and have your own vehicles, but I feel very strongly that people very often are seeing television and reading papers based on their political comfort zone. It's not about that. It's about going beyond and looking at many sides to come together to find not the black and the white, but sometimes the gray. Journalism means coverage of facts and information, and that's what our organization is about. So Stephen Sotloff, who we still mourn, had amazing words to share with us as Americans as well, to tell us what's still unfolding, because ISIS is out of control, and the United States doesn't seem to understand or read the streets that we see each and every day in the Middle East of what is unfolding beyond, before our eyes. The Gaza war. And by the way, I had a son. We had a son who was in the Israeli army who was almost killed in that Gaza war last summer. I visited those tunnels that you saw here on your screens. As we sit here today, those tunnels are being rebuilt in the hundreds. And Israel is denying it. They don't want to deal with it yet. They're concerned by how they might appear in terms of the public consumer. Terror cannot reign like that. We have to be cognizant of the realities of what are happening and talk about freely what is going on. The Media Line, it's an American news agency. And as I said, it covers the Middle East. But it's not all doom and gloom. There are many, many stories, economic cooperation between Israelis and Palestinians that we report on each and every day. The Christian plight, some good, some bad in the region, as we all know, in terms of what's happening, unfortunately, in Syria, which has been horrific. But on the other hand, some of the great stories sometimes that come out of Israel in terms of Christians that are living there and doing wonderful work. There are too many stories to tell. And I hope, too, that you would consider coming, if you haven't been, to see Israel for sure, to expose yourself to a region that has a lot in common with the United States. It's vital that Israel, as one of the only democracies, not a complete democracy, but one of the only democracies in the Middle East, stay strong, because it's critical to what's happening vis-a-vis Iran, vis-a-vis Syria. To the United States, it's something that needs to be strengthened, and it's something that should be in your prayer. I'm going to hand you over to the man who carries my bags and wish you again a very good day, and that God keep everyone safe.
With an introduction like that, where can I go? Every man says he works for his wife. I really work for my wife. For how long? Well, we'll see. I want to thank Reverend Kimball for giving us this opportunity. It's a bit of a personal mission. The bond that we learned about, that we recognize, that we experience day to day between the people of Israel, the people of the Middle East, in fact, and the American people, is amazing. It's a blessing so great that it's shocking only in how unrecognized it is here in America. Sadly, what we see of it here in America is political wrangling. We see the state of Israel becoming a political pawn. Which party embraces Israel more? What politician denigrates Israel and therefore doesn't belong in the Congress or the Senate or the White House? It's much greater than that. We moved to Israel in 1999. We were greeted shortly thereafter by an expression you might know, the Intifada, the Second Intifada, the Palestinian uprising, typified by buses blowing up, suicide bombers, carnage in the streets. It wasn't long before we were sitting, and this was a 7-hour time difference, so it was the end of the day for us on September 11th. And we were watching what was transpiring in New York and Washington on television at the end of the day. The most amazing experience of that horror was the reaction of the Israeli people. The Israeli people were expressing, number one, far above everything else, love for the Americans, frustration that the Israelis, who know terror so well and so much better than almost anybody on earth, were unable to do something magical or something spiritual or something that would work, something that would allay the fears of those who feared the worst in America, the uncertainty breeding more suspicion, more fear. But the frustration the Israelis expressed, more than anger, more than hate, more than determination to rid the world of the scourge, above everything was what could we do to embrace our American brothers and share our experience in some way that's going to make it possible for them to continue. But it doesn't stop. It does continue. Felice and I were arriving at Houston one day. It was probably about 2003, 2004. We were arriving at Houston. We were around the luggage carousel. Both of our cell phones went off. We have three sons, as Felice mentioned. One of our sons was on my cell phone. Another of our sons was on my wife's cell phone. And they had just witnessed the explosion of a bus in downtown Jerusalem. Unbeknownst to each other, each of the two sons was at a different side of the explosion. One was here, one was here. They're about 5 or 6 years difference in age. They had different perspectives, but that's how we learned about the latest of the tragedies. And as parents, we went through this ritual, even though long distance. I say this not to be sensationalist, but there's an ongoing debate in Israel that applies to America, and we pray that it doesn't apply very much more. And that's, how far does this idea of getting up and showing the bad guy that can't win go? It sounds good, it's a good cliche, but to what extent is a society ready to truly rid themselves of the scourge? Stephen Sotloff was a brave reporter, a great reporter. He had a magnificent, God-given ability, a gift to take data from today and extrapolate tomorrow. And while the world was just learning about the Arab Spring and he was reporting from Libya about the Arab Spring, he was also writing about Syria and something called ISIS. And he was warning that ISIS is different than every other species we've seen before it, because ISIS will reproduce in your backyard. And given the technological advantages that they take advantage of, we're seeing exactly that. The Western nations are seeing their young people get on planes, go to Turkey, go to Jordan, go wherever they can make an entry into Syria or Iraq. They think they're doing something noble, fighting with ISIS, then they come back to their communities, and the day will come when they turn the guns. The lone wolf phenomenon, which we see so much in the aftermath of the horror in Charleston, is another product of the Middle East. Our son, who has been a medic since he's 15 years old, has been the first on the scene of at least 4 terrorist events, was one of the first to witness firsthand the result of the lone phenomenon. You see, in Israel, one of the reasons they're so successful against terror is the courage of these young men who go undercover and become part of the Palestinian society and go throughout the Arab world as if they were from the Arab world. That kind of intelligence that so often fends off disaster is impotent in the face of the lone wolf. The lone wolf is inspired. The lone wolf sees a moment of glory. He's in a situation he didn't even necessarily expect. He sees his glory, he sees the moment, he takes it, and people die. And this is a message that the Israelis are trying to convey to the world too, that you have to watch what you say, that words kill, ideas kill. When you inspire, when you incite, this is no different than arming somebody, handing them a gun, handing them ammunition, and sending them on their way. We don't want to preach a message of doom and gloom. There's a lot of good things that come from the Middle East relationship with the United States. It's a very positive, you know, they say peace works from the bottom up more than it does from the top down. And that's evident nowhere more than in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. And by the way, don't ever be fooled by these people who like to tell you that the Israeli-Palestinian conflict is the motherlode of all Middle Eastern conflicts. that if the Israelis and Palestinians would sign a document, Sunnis and Shiites would love each other. Big campfire, kumbaya, the whole schmear. It's not going to work like that. It doesn't work like that. Israel and the Palestinians, on the pecking order of things, by all measures, is kind of low down on the list. It just gets a lot of publicity here in America and European countries for a lot of reasons, many of which are political. But be sure to understand that there's a great deal of peace building going down on the lower levels. And there are people who deal with each other, and there's economic cooperation, there's energy cooperation, there's health services cooperation, there's agricultural cooperation. The list goes on, and the longer we continue, the list grows. So be grateful. It's not all negative. It's not all something to be feared. I invite you to join us in Israel. I would like to publicly invite the Reverend to put together a group to come over, let us host you, let us show you around, let us show you the blessings of Israel that aren't normally on the tourist docket. Felice and I were moved when we, first of all, the response by Reverend Kimball to Rabbi Friedman's request to have us appear with you today, it was unhesitating, it was so automatic and so warm and so heartfelt, it was moving to us. We came in here this morning as strangers, but it's only a half hour later, we don't even feel like strangers anymore. We thank you for your hospitality. We thank you for the blessing you've bestowed upon us by letting us speak to you. And we hope that this will begin a relationship, including if you'd like to sign up for our daily blast of about 600 words. It's a big deal on Capitol Hill, because we're not agenda-driven. Our only agenda is truth, honesty. Everybody says it, but we actually do it. You know, if you want to cut a great joke in the Middle East, you walk over to somebody and say, I'm a journalist, but I'm unbiased. They love it. They do. Thank you. Have a great day, a great week. And remember, as you contemplate the horrors that we're witnessing here, they have to be stopped. And they can only be stopped with a truthful recognition of what they are and where they come from.